Dads Lifting Dads is a diverse community of dads coming together to celebrate our challenges and rejoice in our successes. It's about dads who know that true strength comes from vulnerability. And it's for dads seeking support and growth to become better individuals, partners, and dads. These are their stories. Phil Dolan is an extremely proud dad, and it's an honor to have him here for episode 5 of the Dads Lifting Dad podcast. Growing up in a house and in a time when love necessarily wasn't shown through physical affection or words of affirmation, Phil was adamant that his family and his children would overflow with this abundance. It was a running joke with family and friends that his daughter was never going to learn to walk because for the first few years, Phil didn't want to put her down. This sums up Phil in a nutshell. An extremely huge heart and one of the most passionate people I've come across. Phil and I have had many conversations over the last few years, but my most favorite ones have always been about family. Phil has been like my crystal ball in a sense. With two older kids, there's been many chats about many learnings of parenting. Phil is an extremely humble dad that doesn't attribute any great teachings to the amazing kids he has raised. For me, this only highlights the importance and power that just being in your kid's life, being present, and nurturing this special bond can do to create an incredible relationship. Phil is someone I've long admired as a dad, and it's my pleasure to dive deeper into this episode with him as I welcome Phil to the Dads Lifting Dad podcast. Welcome to the Dads Lifting Dads podcast, Phil Dolan.
Thank you, Dan. Pleasure to be here.
Excellent. Excellent. All right, Phil, I'm extremely excited to talk to you today. For those that don't know, me and you used to work together, and amongst the many conversations we would have in the early mornings, the vast majority of our conversations and the conversations I value probably the most were about family and our kids. So I'm really keen to continue those conversations today and to ask you a little bit more in-depth questions around it and to for you to share, you know, your experience as a dad. Because I think for me, I always looked at you as, and I still look at you as kind of like that senior figure for me that, you know, has been through, you know, the kind of the tough baby and toddler phases, and, you know, your kids are kind of at the tail end of, you know, the teenage years now and in their early kind of adulthood and, you know, going out into the big wide world. So it's kind of, it'd be good to cover that. But do you just want to start by telling everyone that's listening who you are and a little bit about yourself?
Okay, Phil Dolan, as you've already mentioned. I'm now 56. I've got two children, a 21-year-old girl and 18-year-old boy. I've been married to my wife, Gina, for 28 years, been together for 30 years. I'm from Queensland, born and bred in Queensland, spent 50 years up there and moved down here 6 years ago for my wife's work. Love my time in Brisbane, but certainly enjoying my time in Sydney as well. I've had a charmed life, I believe. Had a very good upbringing. Have had a great relationship with my wife and two gorgeous children. So I must admit, I haven't had a lot of a tragedy or a dilemma in my life besides losing my father a few years ago. Otherwise, life is grand, in my opinion.
Beautiful. Do you just want to share your upbringing? So you said you had a pretty good upbringing. So just want to, because like I like to think that, you know, it's our upbringing can often shape how we bring up our kids or how we deal with parenting. So yeah, if you just want to talk a little bit about your upbringing.
Sure. I was one of three boys. I was the youngest son. we were a very sporty family. So we were very active every weekend in going to different parts of the globe as it felt, playing different sport. I remember my father as just being a worker. He wasn't so much there all the time, not that it was his choice. Just back in those days, the man being a provider, he worked very hard. He left early and got home late. We lived on property. So we had 2.5 acres, 64 orange trees, a horse paddock. So when my father wasn't working himself, he'd come home and he'd be working or mowing and working in the yard or driving us kids around to different sporting events. So I actually didn't see my father have any time to himself. It seemed like everything he did was for his family, and he sacrificed everything for us. In saying that, I wouldn't say he was a loving father. So it was not as if he was one that ever hugged us or held us or nurtured us or said any loving words for it to us. He was just the man's man that worked and provided and sacrificed everything. So that's where I saw, that's how my upbringing was. My mother, she, I guess, ran the household at home. She worked part-time and didn't work for a good period of time. So she was just always caring for us three boys. She gave up her own career to be a wife, to be a mother. Similar thing, she was always there for us, and there was nothing they wouldn't do for us, but we weren't brought up in a loving household. We weren't overly close, but they still spoiled us and did everything for us. I joke that we were brought up by Mr. and Mrs. Brady, in the way that it was just, you could put a video on how household, and it was always this non-argumentative, perfect household. I was the one that made the most noise. Maybe it was because I was a baby. I wanted to make myself known. So I was the one that probably had the most tantrums and caused the most grief, where both my brothers were quite introverted, where I was very much the opposite of an introvert. Yeah, the household was probably even a lot quieter before I arrived. But it was a great upbringing. In saying that, it was a great upbringing. I had never basically been disciplined or smacked in my life. I know you might find it hard to believe, Daniel. I know you're meaning to give me a clip around here sometimes at work, but that was the household we were in.
Yeah, wow. I think, the couple things about the discipline, and because I think you hear two different dynamics around that generation. I guess there's a generation of discipline in terms of smacking and things like that. And there was, when you if you grew up kind of with the Brady Bunch, you'd see that kind of that typical, extremely positive family and household. When you talk about that, your parents though didn't show love in terms of, I guess, voicing it, or physically hugging or anything like that. Do you think that was again, a generational thing?
Possibly so. I think back then, that whole man's man thing, I don't think it was probably just the way things were. Dad was one of 10 children, so he may well have gotten lost in the numbers himself. His mother was a very strong woman by all reports. She, even the husband cowered in her presence. So that was probably, he may well have been brought up in a household where it was more about his siblings than closeness with parents. Possibly, mum, one of five kids, brought up in a bit of a working family as well, a very disciplined family. So I think generation, the upbringing they had, they certainly weren't from money. So they were always brought up as workers, as kids, always having to do their chores and having to work. Mum, I think even my wife mentioned to me once, my daughter, that my mother had said to them that she wasn't overly excited about becoming a mother herself. So she maybe didn't have as many maternal instincts herself. Did the job well, but whereas, I suppose, I was so desperate to be a father. And whether or not it was a bit different for them, I don't know. Or maybe kids in those days were brought up to work on the farm or something than anything else. And from a discipline perspective, there was never any discipline, but there was so much respect from the kids to the parents. Like, we would never talk back to our parents, like, as to my kids talking back to me is a standard conversation, whereas I wouldn't talk back to my parents. So there was no real need for discipline in some respects either.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so interesting because, I know you to be, like, you've obviously got that work ethic of your mother and father, but you're also a quite, you're touchy-feely kind of, you show your love physically and you're quite open and outspoken in sharing your feelings as well. So how was it a matter of taking the bits that you liked and disregarding the bits that I guess you didn't like with your parents? Or do you just think that you kind of, I guess what I'm trying to ask is how did you end up the way you were? What was it kind of specifically that got you to where you were as a dad and as a husband, I guess, as well?
Yeah, really good question. Interesting question because I haven't really given it much consideration. I don't believe that I was influenced as how I am by my parents at all. I feel as though in some respects I was born this way, that, like I mentioned, I was a kid unlike my two brothers. It was emotional and a bit temperamental and always whinging or carrying on, as my brothers would say. So I think I was just really emotional as compared to my two brothers. And I think that was just me. So I don't think I have tried consciously to be anything different than how I am. Mm. So a lot of ways I wish I had, because obviously, being as emotional as what I am, there's a lot of positives and negatives. Obviously, the positive is that I show good emotion really well. I'm always loving towards the children, and there's a lot of laughter, and I'm so proud of them and so happy and so excited to be around them and go on any emotional journey with them. But on the downside, of course, when things aren't so good, I can be temperamental, I can be emotional, and that's as a husband and a father. So there's positives, but being able to control the negatives has always been a challenge for me, and I don't think I've been overly successful in doing it.
Yeah, it's just interesting that you feel, and nobody can ever take that away from you, that you were born that way. Like, I just, because like, if like, I have the benefit of knowing you, so I would have thought that it was something that you had just seen, or seen it that it was so, I guess, ingrained in you in your upbringing, that especially the love side of you. But to hear that it was, not the opposite, but it just very, very different. And then you, I guess you just felt like you were, you were, I guess, supposed to be this emotional being. Because I think, we can say it has its downsides, right? But I think I'd much prefer being feeling all my emotions than not feeling any of them at all. Because it's just, I just think, when you're in those emotions, whether it be, positive or a negative emotion, right? I think to be able to feel that and to move through that, I think is far beneficial than to, like I said, not feel them at all. So yeah, it's so interesting that you kind of, you just felt like you were born that way. And you can, like I said, you can feel it when you're around you. You're so open and sharing and giving in that love side of you. And you do, you wear your heart on your sleeve. And, sometimes, people see that the other side of it. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I just think that, it's just another side, and it's all you. So I guess how hard, especially that, because you when dealing with the kids, or I guess with your wife and your relationship, how hard is it to how hard is it to feel that, like, if something goes, I guess, wrong, what's, because you're a very emotional person, what kind of process, I guess, do you go through? Is it just always from like a zero to kind of 100, or is it a gradual process for you?
No, like I would my kids will say that I'm a pushover and then I reach my limit. They will say that they can control me and manipulate me any way they want, which is probably quite true. And I will take it until it builds up to a point where I don't know if I use the word explode being the right terminology, but no, it's not a gradual thing. I'll let it slide, let it go, take it, whatever, and then snap.
Yeah, that's very much, that's something that, that's very much the way I am. Because it's, yeah, it's obviously, and we've talked about this not on the podcast, like face to face when we're working together, but we see a lot of similarities in each other, and that's definitely a big one that, I can definitely relate to. Well, before the kids, so with your relationship with Gina, so you said you've been together 30 years, so there's kind of two things I want to know. So I kind of want to know how that began, how that blossomed, and where it all kind of started. And then the second one is, and something that's, I would like to know the answer to, how do you survive 30 years?
Yeah, Gina's was a friend of a friend's girlfriend. Have I got that right? A friend's girlfriend's friend. I had never seen her before. I actually saw her working. She was going to uni at the time. She's considerably younger than I. So at the time I was 26, she was 19. I was with my mates, and she was working, and I remember seeing her. And for me, physical attraction was huge. The moment I actually laid eyes on her, I just thought she was the most stunning person I'd seen in my life. I was overcome by how beautiful she was. So right at that instant, Unlike me, totally, because I hadn't been in long relationships at all, and girls didn't mean a whole lot to me at that point. It was all about mates and cars and sport. I was just overcome by her. So I actually reefed a pair of flowers out of a flower bed, and approached her and basically asked for a phone number. She reluctantly gave it to me. And on two occasions when I rang her, she told her mother that, no, tell that guy that I'm not home. I don't want to go out with him. But on the third time, her mother said, no, it's your problem. If you don't want to go out with him, you tell him. But she reluctantly said, okay, we'll go out. And I think she might have just been overcome by how much I thought of her instantly, that maybe she found it hard not to like someone that loved her so much. Look, it happened all very quickly. Like I've said, she was 19 at the time. By the time probably got engaged, I don't know, maybe a year later, she had her 21st birthday, and then we were married when she was 21. So within 2 years, we'd gone through the process of engagement, the 21st, and a marriage. So, yeah, we were married within 2 years of meeting, or 2.5 years. Certainly from my perspective, she was this highly intelligent person that was stunningly attractive, that was so capable of everything and anything. Like, I'd never come across anybody as capable as her, anybody as intelligent as her, that could just do anything. So I was batting well above my average, so far above my average, it was just unbelievable. So I've considered myself very fortunate to be in this relationship. She's a very organized person, very structured, very organized. And even back in those days, she would say, okay, great, married at 21. We had the mortgage, moved into a house straight away. She said, yep, I'll have two kids before I'm 30, one at 27, one at 30. And guess what? She had one at 27, one at 30. So she had the two kids at 30. She's like me in some ways, that she's also an emotional person. We argue. We have a lot of good times, we have a lot of laughter, but we argue as well. And I think the household she was brought up in was a single mum with two girls, and they used to scream and yell nonstop. Her mother used to joke that Gina come out screaming, hasn't stopped since. Basically, when we yell and scream, sometimes it's just the way we communicate. Whereas I think with either one of us, if we'd have partners that were very different to us, it might have been a very difficult relationship to continue, because sometimes I suppose an argument may mean the end of the earth to some couples. To us, it's just a way of expressing ourselves. Life continues.
There you go. And then, so what's the secret, Phil? What's the secret to 30 years together?
Well, I think certainly those first years, you know, especially when the kids were young, they were still honeymoon years. I mean, for us, the honeymoon years lasted a long time. They lasted a long time. Mind you, there was absence too, in the way that when Gina was pregnant and she had Keely, I was on the road a lot. At that time, I was in IT, and my territory was Adelaide to Darwin, and my head office was in Melbourne. So I was away 3 weeks out of four. So I was away constantly. So we probably didn't see enough of each other to get sick of each other at that stage. She did say to me, you need to change careers, because I feel like a single parent. Luckily, she had a lot of support from mother. Gina's mother, she was there for both of our kids, and she had a massive impact on the upbringing of our two children. Because both of us were very career-minded at that point. So both of us were trying to climb corporate ladders, and and trying to earn more money. And so my wife also was starting to get into positions where she was traveling more. So we were going in different directions. So at the time that we were both going in different directions, again, luckily, my mother-in-law assisted a lot. But then it soon became obvious that my wife was going to be the breadwinner. So I took on more positions that saw me traveling a little bit less. Probably not too much, though. I was still traveling quite a bit. But yeah, we seem to manage it. But I do not know what we would have done without my mother-in-law. Because it just would have been a real struggle for us.
Yeah, wow, that it sounds like it just a huge power of support there from your mother-in-law. It's incredible.
Well, also I think my daughter, similar to my wife, extremely independent, and she would tell anybody that she brought herself up. Because that's just how she is. Very independent girl, and she was always going to run her own race. And we've encouraged that, mind you. A part of our parenting choice was not to overparent our children, and that they would go out there and make their own way, knowing that they always had us there for support or to fall back on, but that they would make their own decisions and make their own way. And my daughter has been that since a very, very early age. My son not as much, although it's very, very much shown in him in his last few years, but my daughter from a very early age was always going to run her own race.
Well, indeed. Do you think that's as a result of you and Gina being focused on your careers? And I'm not saying not parenting at all, but do you think that's heavily to do with it?
I think it would have a lot to do with it, but I think there was a lot of other things involved. I believe she's wired that way. What did they say? That your same sex parent is your biggest influence in life? Some say. Gina's certainly got a lot of both of us in her, Kelly, sorry. She's driven and intelligent like a mother. She's emotional like me, very much so. So I think born that way, been influenced subconsciously by her parents, mostly her mother. And yes, also, I'll tell you what was a very big influence in her life was her friends at certain stages in her life. We were lucky enough that the kids went to a primary school, especially in Brisbane, Sheryl Stoke Primary School, which had an incredible class of child. She was just in with a group where they were the same. They were driven children. They were intelligent children. The teachers she had for a state school were fantastic. So she was very fortunate that she had really good influences in her life besides her parents, that she had fantastic teachers and she had fantastic friends. I know a guidance counselor friend of mine once said that it's so important, especially in high school, trying to have your child in with the right group. And you don't want to be in that leftover group. And I can understand how that can influence you because she always had incredibly good influences in her life.
Yeah, well, and you've said similar about Lucas. We've talked about, you know, sporting and a lot of his sporting coaches and, you know, the teams and the dads around that supporting network as it was, you know, of a similar ilk in regards to really, I guess, empowering and just that real sense of community that was a real positive one to encompass them both. So, yeah, let's talk about the early years, though. So Keely came along first. Gina was 27. How old were you?
So I would have been 34.
So what was what was that like, I guess, finding out that Gina was pregnant? And then, yeah, what were the early years like?
Yeah, again, all planned, of course. Those first few years was all about us trying to get on our feet financially. We haven't been given a cent from either parent. Everything that we've tried to accumulate, financially, has been just between the two of us. So we didn't want to enter that parenting life until we were on our way financially and career-wise. We were definitely ready for it. I could not have been more excited. I was so desperate to be a parent at that point. And as it was, being one of three boys, I was also desperate to have a little girl. So when I had Keely, I got emotional thinking about it. because I was a blubbering mess when I had her, because I was so excited to have a daughter.
Yeah.
And it meant everything to me.
Take your time, mate. Take your
and
time.
That hasn't changed. I still get really emotional about my children.
It's beautiful.
It was really exciting. I couldn't have been happier.
It's beautiful, Phil. And I remember, one of the highlights of, our time when we talked together was, and you're open about this as well. You didn't put Keely down. Like as soon as she popped out, essentially, you just never put her down, because you were just so smitten and just filled with love for her. Given that, your mum wasn't very maternal, your dad was very, a man's man. I know you said you're emotional, but where did that, because that, a lot of men wouldn't have that excitement. Where do you think that came from?
Oh, I can't answer you. I don't know. And I don't think, and it was, the excitement was building, but I never thought I would have reacted the way I did when I first saw my daughter.
Yeah, wow.
And like you said, it was always a joke that no one sort of could understand how Keely learned to walk, because, yes, I didn't put her down for the first 3 years of her life.
You're getting me, Phil. You're getting me. All right, we'll go to the other terror then. Let's talk about Lucas.
Oh, my boy.
Yeah, let's talk about him. So he came along, Gina was 30.
Mm-hmm.
So how long, 21, 18, so a couple of years between them,
three years between the two of them, as planned. Funny enough, there were 3 years between myself and my brother and 3 years between them. I don't know why the 3 years were significant, but anyway. And it was a bit, it was a good, it was a good, a good gap. Different pregnancies. Keely was a dream. Pregnancy, Gina had no problems at all. There wasn't much morning sickness or any morning sickness with Keely. Absolutely no issues with the birth. Lucas, morning sickness. His big head caused some grief. He had to be taken away from us straight away because he'd swallowed what's it, monoxium or whatever they like to call it. So he wasn't breathing initially for a bit when he first came out. So they had to clear that first before we got hold of him. But perfect from my perspective that I had the daughter, which I always wanted, but I had a son, dare I say, to carry on the Dolan name, a son. Lucas and I, he was a bit like me, maybe the son, in the way that he was an emotional boy. He always required more loving than Keely. Keely was so independent and so strong. Lucas, we've become really close as he's become a teenager, and some would say too close. You know, he's become sometimes more like a mate, which if I've really got a parent, which I never really parented maybe so much, you know, I've been criticised by my daughter for saying that he's too much of a mate to me than too much of a son. But then again, I would say to her, is it any different? And she would just reply that, yeah, but I don't need parenting. That's... She's the perfect child, and she pretty much is. But yeah, whereas Lucas has always been one too that has been heavily influenced by the people around him. I mentioned about his footy coaches. He has one which has always had mentors besides me, whether it be footy coaches, whether it be just older people, you know, a neighbour, whatever. He has always been heavily influenced by people he meets, and he's still to this day heavily influenced by people.
Yeah, yeah.
And where Keely knows she will make up her own mind and be unlikely to be influenced anything like Lucas.
Yeah, yeah. And it's funny that you say that about Lucas, because, you know, he, before I left IKEA, you know, had the pleasure of, you know, meeting him a couple of times at work, and he had that utmost respect for you. So I think, even though, you know, it can sometimes fall into that kind of that mate, you know, parent kind of divide, he still had that, you know, and similar to you in that regard, you still had that respect for your parents. So I think, you know, it's I look at you for you know, not a sense of right and wrong when it comes to parenting, but you've been through the early years, and like I said, your kids are now, you know, 21 and 18. So is there anything, not saying you would change or do differently, but is there anything where you felt that maybe, or in the moment?
Absolutely. Oh man, without any shadow of a doubt, there is. We simply weren't, I won't use the word discipline, but we didn't bring in enough structure in the household. It was almost like we were 60s hippies or something, because you know, they did what they did. Also, maybe because my mother-in-law had such a huge part in her upbringing that she would spoil them rotten as well. So I think they were overly spoiled, and sometimes they cannot see that they are privileged children. You know, they don't acknowledge materially what we've given them, or even emotionally what we've given them. They are two very, very good children. Don't get me wrong. They are, I couldn't wish for better children. And I'm so proud of them both, and not just in what they may achieve, but just in how they conduct themselves around their friends or around older people. They're wonderful children, but we didn't set enough structure around, even simply domestically around the house. Getting them to put a dish in the dishwasher or clean up their room or put their clothes in the wash basket or whatever can be torture. So at an early age, we didn't set those boundaries where the expectation is that they need to do these things. So that was a definite failing on our part right there. And that's about it, though.
And has the ship sailed on it, or are you still...
gone. Yeah, it's disappeared over the horizon, that ship. That's it now. Mind you, like they're just having to learn it themselves. Like if they have got friends coming over, well, they need to do something about their room. If they want to have clean clothes, so we don't go hunting for them, they need to make sure they're in the wash basket. So they have a very good regime of looking after their skin. So they're having to do it themselves as far as that sort of stuff is concerned. But I think I would collapse on the ground if I came home and I said, geez, Dad, I've unpacked the dishwasher and vacuumed the floor just because I thought it was the right thing to do. That has never happened and never will happen. So parent failing right there.
But you say that's the only one. So I think that's a win, Phil. I think that's an overall win.
Yeah. I think it's... I think they know right from wrong. My daughter certainly does. My son, like I said, it can be easily influenced. So he likes to have a good time. No different to you and me. Dan, especially when we were young, we like to go out for a drink and be with our mates. So Lucas is very much that way inclined. He likes to get out there and have a good time. He likes to live life. There is no doubt about that, where, of course, Keely is motivated by what she wants to accomplish in life. Lucas, at this stage, is motivated about enjoying life. But in the same token, he's very much thinking about his future as well.
Yeah, and I guess, it's a balance as a parent, right, because you don't want to be overbearing and, as soon as you tell them that you shouldn't be doing that, we all know what they're going to do. They're going to go and do that. So what kind of conversations, especially with Lucas, do you have? Because obviously, me and you both know and we've both been there, but, is it words of advice? Is it just a conversation, a reminder? What kind of do you say in regards to, even though he's a good kid, he wouldn't do anything to harm anyone. It's not saying that, if he doesn't go out, something might happen. I see plenty of mates growing up that, we were just in the wrong situation at the wrong time. So how do you, just instill that, some common sense? Is it through conversation? Mm-hmm.
It is through conversation, especially over the odd beer or when he's out. Because he is very open and asking me questions. The one thing we always had in mind, or I certainly did as a father, that I always wanted to make my kids very aware that I can come to, and my wife feels the same way, that I can come to us and ask any question without fear of judgment or persecution, that just open, honest conversation. And with Lucas, it was always instilling into him about respect. When it comes to not just, mostly girls, but mates as well, that the fact that he has got to be respectful in the decisions he makes. So if he enters into certain agreements, it needs to be mutual, and just to make sure that he always has respect for the other person's position or opinion. So that's definitely purely... I've got to say nothing to her. She just knows right from wrong automatically. And if anything, she probably is the one giving me the advice more than the opposite way around. And I'll probably need it. Just general conversations. But no, we've never really had a sit down official talk about anything. But again, Lucas has been very open about asking the questions around all sorts of things.
Yeah, and that's one thing I know we've talked about before. How do you cultivate that trust? Because a lot of kids wouldn't go to their parents and I don't want to share, anything that the kids wouldn't want me to share, but how do they come to you with that level of trust that, you guys aren't going to persecute them or judge them for you? How did you display that as parents, you and Gina?
I, th- I, th- I, th- Whether I'm at work or at home, I've always trying to be, would put myself as being very approachable. I like to think whether you work with me, you're next to neighbour, or you're my son or my daughter, that you could look at me as being an approachable person. Certainly, I don't in conversation judge others or are critical of others. And so it's never been a family where it's like they would hear from us, oh, just oh, that person or that person. Mm-hmm. Or it's, we just don't do it. From our perspective, everybody is who they are, and we're all unique. That's what makes us human, and we're all different. And that's what's really good about us. That's what's really good about us is how interesting we can be on how different we can be. So they have always seen me communicate with and be friendly and have friends from all manners of life. They're going to see me anywhere, go to a stranger, whether no matter who they are, and have a conversation with them about anything. I just see that they would see that you know, being honest and asking questions is standard, and that not being judged is standard, and that not being or being unique is good. They're never going to be painted into a corner from us to be something except for what they should be, and we'll just encourage that.
Yeah, I think you've really, you know, reminded me the power of, you know, a parent's actions more so, you know, than what you actually say to your child. And there's a lot of, you know, evidence and research that will support all of that. But it's, they're very much a sponge and very much a looking mm-hmm. at you and what you're doing rather than what you're saying. I think it's, again, you know, full credit to you guys as parents that,
because that's in the cradles and the silver spoons. You know, the song.
Yes. It's an old favorite, that song. But yeah, it's just, it's absolutely, you know, it is. And in that song specifically is a powerful reminder of how, you know, it can not so positively impact the relationship as well, you know, with kids seeing you as what you do. So yeah, it's a good one there, Phil. I think a really good reminder for me as a parent as well, because I worry about a lot of what I think about the conversations, you know, Betty's only four, but I think about the conversations probably more than I think about the actions I have and the words I use and say when I'm, you know, talking to Chrissy or talking to other people. So yeah, it's a really good reminder.
I think what's important there too, Dan, is that to also see us fail, they've seen me, you know, do some dumb things. And you know what, I would never want to hide that from them. I don't want to think that life is perfect, that we are perfect. You know, we've all got our own issues. We all fall, and I'm quite happy. I would not hide that from my children when I fall, because I want them to see that. I don't want them to see my imperfections and know that imperfections are standard. We all have them.
Yeah, another good reminder, Phil. I think, it's easy for parents to hide the bad stuff, you know, put the bad, you know, in it's easy, but yeah, it's, there's so much power in, you know, showing them that, you know, you make mistakes, you fail, but you just keep, you know, get up and keep going. So so much power in that. What has been the biggest challenge as a dad? So getting to where the kids are now, what's been the biggest challenge for you?
Ooh, biggest challenge. Wow, that's a toughie. I guess there were different stages. Different stages. I mean, that stage when the kids were young, the challenge of trying to balance having a career and trying to get ahead financially and also being there for the children. So when they were young, that was a huge challenge. And again, I've mentioned again, fortunately, we had a mother-in-law which was able to assist during that process. And things like after-school care, which were just incredible quality. Like I've heard people say that, dubious about where the kids go to school and after-school care, not being happy about the environment. We never had that. We just had this incredible luck of fantastic school, fantastic after-school care, fantastic friends, where we never thought they were in harm's way. As they got older, it's always a challenge when they have something emotionally happen to them as they get older with friends and things, and you can't just fix it. You know, you can't just fix it. The things which they've got to deal with themselves, and you're just powerless to sometimes fix things that are really hurting them. Whether it be a breakup or just things which happen between friends where you're just powerless to do anything. So being powerless to help them emotionally sometimes, or again, you can be there, but you're just not able to fix it. That's always tough. My daughter going through migraine issues that she has at the moment and all the tests and things she's going through, I'm powerless to fix it. I can't resolve that for her. So you just as a father always wish and feel as though you can fix everything. You just can't, and that's frustrating.
And that's it. That's, I guess, one thing that it doesn't matter how old they get, right? It's one thing that will never change. So, they'll always be a kid. Then you'll just never, it hurts me just thinking about it, because it is. And I feel that one as well. What is one thing that, or could be many, what excites you most about the future for you being a dad, your kids? What are you excited for in that space?
Heaps. From my daughter's perspective, just for her to fulfill dreams. I mean, she's gone through nearly finished 5.5 years of university to have her double of law and business. So looking and again, she's so driven. So looking forward to seeing what she can achieve, because she's very fortunate that not only is she driven and intelligent, she's also incredibly good with people. They both are very fortunate that they can develop relationships extremely quickly. Lucas, I would say, is more natural at it. Lucas clearly is very good at it, and it's natural. Lucas, he's just got a gift. He loves people, and people love him. He can develop a relationship with someone in 30 seconds, and just wear their best mates, and have been known each other for years and years, years. He's got an absolute art to it. So his success will come in the way that he can sell himself, and the way that he can sell, and the way that he can develop a relationship. He's desperate to get into to small business and be a small business owner and be a commercial real estate owner through the business. That will come by the relationships he will build. He will have his success in his own way, using his own tools. I've got plenty to look forward to on both of them. Relationship-wise, Lucas has always been very keen on family. He wants to be a father. He wants to be a husband. He is desperate to do that. Keely has always been in long-term relationships, But through her priority has always been her drive to achieve. But I know that, yeah, when the time is right, everything will fall into place for her. She's got a lot going for her, and she's always made the right decisions. Keely's just always made the right decisions, so she'll continue to do so. So I have no fear for them having anything but a bright future.
Yeah, beautiful. And will you be Granddad Phil or Poppy Phil?
Just Phil. Just Phil.
Just Phil. Just
Phil. Well, Keely has called me Philip since I've known. She was maybe 12 or something. She'll just call me Philip. I say, Dad. She'll go, no worries, Philip. So she's called me that for ages. Lucas, for ages too, probably not as long. And he'll still call me Dad on occasions. No, I can't. Yeah, it's pretty rare to hear Keely. Oh, no, if Keely wants something, she'll call me Dad. Yeah.
All right. We're fairly close to the end now. What's one piece of advice or something that you wished you had known, I guess, at the start of being a dad? Is it one bit of wisdom you want to gift future dads, new dads, dads to be?
Look, when it's kind of worded like that, you think of something which could have done better. So for me, that was what I mentioned before with setting, you know, some structure in their lives. Like, it's that fine line, because I want them to be free to make their own decisions and choices. But they still need that bit of kind structure in their lives. So like I said, I wouldn't have changed very much at all. But that's the only thing I would have changed. But yeah, from my perspective, for any parent, let your kid be your kid. Don't try and mold them into what you want them to be. Let them be what they want to be, because they will be the best and the happiest at what they want to be, more than what you want them to be. So let them be free to develop and make their mistakes, and don't be over judgmental if they do make mistakes. I haven't overparented it, and I wouldn't if I had to go through it again.
Beautiful. That's some sage advice, or sagey advice, for people that in joke there. So. Phil, I think, you know, one thing, and, you know, I've known you for a few years now, but one thing that stands out through, you know, our conversation now, you're a very humble parent. You used your words like luck and, you know, just things kind of, that's just the way they were destined to be, kind of thing. But I think, you know, the reason your kids have turned out as beautiful kids is full credit to how you and Gina have raised them. And I think, I say you're humble because you don't give yourself enough credit. So I think, you know, there's a fine line between over-parenting and, I guess, not parenting at all. yeah. And I think, you know, to be honest, I think you've found that balance. You've let your kids be kids. You've let your kids make mistakes, grow, develop into just beautiful people. And that's, you know, you might say that it doesn't feel like you've done a lot, but that's a huge achievement. And it's bloody hard to do. It's bloody hard to to let your kids make mistakes. It's bloody hard to watch your kids that, you know, go through struggles and challenges, and it's hard to discipline, and it's hard to be a parent. So I think, you know, full credit to you. Don't be so humble about it, because you know, for everything you think that you haven't done, you've done so much more, and then some. So
thanks.
I want to thank you for your time. I genuinely appreciate it. Like I said at the start of the podcast, my highlights, you know, we had plenty of good times when we were working together, but my highlights, you know, were definitely when we talked about, you know, parenting and being dads and relationships, because that's just where, and, you know, I could see it then, and, you know, people will be able to see it now, that, you know, just there's nothing but pure love and joy and pride that comes through you when you talk about your family. So I thank you from the bottom of my heart.
Thanks, mate. Thank you. And I certainly miss you in the workplace, mate. I wish you were still there. That's for sure. But obviously, everything happens for a reason. So I'll have to get by without you in the workplace.
Yeah, I'll leave that one. No, it's been, look, I it's funny because you miss that day-to-day interaction with people. And like I said, it was never, you know, it wouldn't matter where we were in what workplace. I think, you know, the conversations always would have ended up, you know, in with our family, with our kids, with our partners. So yeah, I'm just, you know, grateful that we can still have those conversations outside of the workplace. Yeah. So, thank you, Phil.
All right, look forward to catching up for a beer, mate.
Beautiful.
Thank you for tuning into the Dads Lifting Dads podcast. I hope you got a lot of value out of it. The Dads Lifting Dads podcast is about strength in vulnerability. It's for dads to share their story. So if this resonated with you, or you know a loved one that might get something out of it, then please share it with them. You can find me, and please connect with me, on Instagram at @dadsliftingdads.